if you're injured, like reaching out for support is so important, and also know that you're still an athlete, but now your recovery is your sport, and everything you were putting into running now goes into your recovery. And that you'll, you know, that's where you're, what you're doing right now as an athlete. So you're still an athlete, you're still a runner. It just so happens that on your athletic journey, this is what you need to do right now. And that you're not, and you're absolutely not alone.
You're listening to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, and this is Trail Talk, where we have casual conversations with all kinds of runners. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultra runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation will go. So if you're ready, let's get started. Welcome back to Trail Talk, the Ultramarathon Mindset Trail Talk, this podcast and the Facebook page. I'm excited for my guest this week, Carrie Jackson. She is a certified mental performance consultant. She's an author of On Top of Your Game, Mental Skills to Maximize Your Athletic Performance, and her new book, Rebound, Train Your Mind to Bounce Back Stronger from Sports Injuries. She's also the co-host of a podcast called The Injured Athletes Club, and she has a personal commitment to lifelong fitness. So she's outdoors on the trail or on the slopes with her snowboard. So welcome, Carrie, to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. I always ask for you to my guests to introduce themselves kind of however you like. So tell us, when you're introducing yourself to someone, what do you say?
Oh man. I live in Northern California, and I have my own business working mm-hmm. with individual exercisers and athletes on mental performance, on their mental skills training. And I get to coach people, you know, just like people have their physical coaches, I get to coach people on the mental aspects of mm-hmm. performance, whether that's as a parent in the boardroom, as an athlete.
Okay.
Yes.
So it's more than just athletics.
I specialize in sports, and I have a couple areas of specialization. Injuries is one. Mm-hmm. But really all the work I do with my athletes, they're all life skills as well. So they end up, even though the context we usually start with is in sports, they end up applying it to other areas of their life as well.
Right. Yeah. And that's part of the reason I think why a lot of runners will run, or athletes do have athletics, is that the things that they learn in the physical performance and linking that with the mental performance is helpful for life. I mean,
absolutely.
I mean, we go out to exercise. It is fun in and of itself, but usually we're looking for some way to improve our life. So, usually I ask, you know, where you started your athletic performance, but I'm going to ask a different question. How did you get into being a mental coach for athletics athletics in particular, and life skills in general?
Yeah, it's funny, because if you'd asked me like in high school or even college, if I thought that my whole career would be around athletics, I would have said you were crazy. Like, I didn't see it coming. But I knew that I wanted to work with people, and I was always fascinated with human behavior. And I thought I wanted to be a therapist. And then as I graduated, literally, as I was walking across the stage during my undergraduate degree, I decided, I don't think this is what I'm supposed to do. And at that same time, I was getting into my own sports. And at the time, I was doing a lot of rock climbing and snowboarding, and also had been racing cars. And I noticed some of the psychology behind my own performance, and the times I would feel tremendous performance anxiety, and then also seeing it with my friends, with different climbing buddies, and I was always fascinated by it, but I had no idea sports psychology existed. Mm-hmm. So it was just things I was experiencing. And then my mom found a brochure. So she was actually looking for a counseling program at the time, and she found a brochure for sports psychology, and she's like, hey, I know you've been thinking about, you know, continuing your education, and I saw this and I thought you might be interested. And I was like, what is this? I went to the next open house and enrolled in the program. So I think, even though I knew I always wanted to work in human behavior, I had no idea it was going to take me down the path of sports psychology.
Wow. So you were doing, you said rock climbing and car racing. So what, yes. What kind of car racing were you doing?
It was
road and track.
It was road. Yeah. So it was, not oval. They were all road courses. Right. So not oval track. Yeah.
Right.
And it was sort of the equivalent of, like competitive recreational, like what you would see in some of the endurance sports. It was that level.
So were they the timed events, like the 24 hour? I have a friend who drives, and so he's entered some that it's a team, so it's the car yes. has to run for 24 hours,
which is amazing.
Yeah. And they switch off drivers.
No, at that point I didn't even know there were endurance events like that. It was more it just different categories of racers that would go and race around the track, and it was an open category, so that meant there were all different types of cars racing against each other. So it was really interesting that not only are you're pairing different strengths of the cars as well as different strengths of the drivers, which made it very interesting.
Yeah, that is a whole. Every sport kind of has its own language and its own.
Totally.
I've learned about different sports, I'm like, my goodness, it's just a whole community of people around around those. Yeah,
in every sport. Yeah,
in every sport. Yeah. So you said rock climbing as well.
Yes.
So were you running at all?
At that point I was doing some running, but mostly it was just to do those other things. Probably at early, I didn't come into running until after college, I think. And I remember the first, I still remember the very first time I tried. I was like, oh, this is a good way to get fit for the other sports that I
right.
love.
Yeah.
And I had no idea what it meant to pace. And so I went out and I ran for 5 minutes and I was like, this is horrible. Why do people do this? This feels awful. I don't get this at all. So then luckily, I kept at it and learned, learned about pacing, learned about different types of workouts and got into trail running, which I was a backpacker, so that it was natural for me to kind of gravitate towards trail running. And so still do, road and trail running today.
So tell a little bit about what you do as a, mental performance consultant. I mean, you've written a couple of books. So, what are the things that you do to help your clients?
Yeah. So, it depends on what someone might seek me out for. Mm-hmm. A lot of times I'll have athletes that will come to me, maybe they are experiencing some performance anxiety. That was the catalyst for the first book, was I had a string of athletes that were experiencing so much performance anxiety to the point where they were starting to contemplate quitting their sport. And these were athletes that loved their sport. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting. I had the string of them. And then we worked together and I gave them the tools to kind of learn how to feel more confident and manage their anxiety. And some of them came back to have their best season ever. And I thought, oh my gosh, it was heartbreaking to think about athletes out there that were thinking about quitting something that they loved to do and gave their, so much meaning to their life, but were thinking about quitting because they couldn't get a handle on their nerves. And so I was like, oh, I got to write this book. So that's a big part of, helping people find more joy and feel more confident in their sport.
So, and I'm going to guess that that's not just elite athletes.
No,
that experience. The performance anxiety would run from, even every the middle level. Of the pack. Yeah. Middle of the pack, even the back of the pack.
Exactly. Yeah. And a lot of my clients are, age groupers and competitive recreational athletes. So I run the gamut from like people trying to run their first 5K to professional and elite athletes competing in national and international competition. So it's, everybody has moments of self-doubt. I was just writing about that actually. Like no matter what level you're at, everybody has it. So, every level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's probably comforting for people who, would seek you out when they, that just to find out, it's like, oh my goodness, I'm not the only one, because I'd imagine that the performance anxiety, there's a lot of like loneliness that would go along with that and feeling like I'm the only one.
It's so true. It's funny. Every once in a while I'll get a client, and I've had multiple clients that have said the exact words independently of each other. It's like, am I your craziest client? Like, am I like the, like, no, in fact, you're not. Yeah. No. So I think you're right that like, there's so much power in normalizing some of the things that an athlete's going through. Like, you are not the only person that has struggled through this. That comes up with my injured athletes too. Like ones that are feeling some fears around re-injury or not feeling as confident coming back into their sport, that, you know, when you get to normalize that, like, you're not the only person that has struggled with this, you're not alone, is very comforting. And sometimes that alone can help people feel like, okay, I can get through this.
Yes. And I thought that was interesting that you have around the mental aspect of performance, but also around injury. And that kind of intrigued me. So, I mean, because I have not run across very many people who talk about the mental side of injury recovery. Mm-hmm. And so
I know.
So speak to that with me a little bit. Talk to me a little bit about that. What's involved in that, and how does the mental side help?
Man, it's so interesting that you don't hear a lot of people talking about it, even though every athlete that has ever been injured will tell you that the recovery process is both physical and mental. But athletes, again and again, they're getting the physical support, but not necessarily the mental support. Mm-hmm. And so early in my career, I was specializing in working with cyclists. And so when you work with cyclists, inevitably, you're going to work with people that are coming back from a crash. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up working with a lot of injured athletes, and I had been an injured athlete. And so what was interesting about my process is I happened to get injured. I had an injury just before my graduate studies, and then I had one occur while I was in the middle of my studying sports psychology, in the middle of my master's. And they were both to the left knee, two different injuries, but the difference between my feelings of confidence and ability to recover from the first injury to the second were profoundly different. And it was because when I got injured during my program, I decided almost immediately it was a snowboarding injury. And as they were taking me down the mountain to the emergency room, I was like, I'm using this. I'm everything that I'm learning in my program to help athletes with their own peak performance, I'm going to apply it to getting through this injury. And I did it. And I came back to have my best season ever. So it was just incredible. And so obvious to me in that moment that needed to be a part of people's recovery process. And now, of course, we have all kinds of research that shows, yes, 100%, the mental recovery is just as important as that physical recovery.
So what is the kind of the biggest challenge that people go through with that?
Yeah.
There's
a few.
There'd be several, I would imagine, but yeah. Name a few that.
There's a few that, like, every athlete I feel like I've worked with will experience that kind of come top of mind. And one is the challenge to the athletic identity. So when you, you know, love your sport and do this sport and it's a part of who you are, and then you're not able to do that thing anymore, it can feel like you've lost that part of yourself, or like, well, who am I if I'm not this athlete, right? So, helping them reconnect to their athletic identity is a big piece. Another one I hear a lot is fears around either fear of losing fitness, or fear of that you're not going to be the same athlete that you were before the injury is another big one. And then fear of re-injury is just a natural thing that a lot of people go through as well. Of as you're ramping back up and getting back into higher levels of intensity, or getting closer to the situation that you got injured in, just the fears that come with that of like, what if you go into protective mode and like, what if I get injured again?
Well, and imagine, like you said, you're a snowboarder, and you said you work with cyclists. And so the crashes runners fall. I mean, trail runners will fall frequently, but it's not as dramatic as like a snowboarding, you know, the injuries tend to be less severe in general. But it's just so. But cycling, I mean, you're going hard into a corner, and you know, you've got that mental. So, or snowboarding, you're cutting the edge hard, you know, and there's that thing in the back of your mind of like, oh my, I can't push up to the edge because this thing is going to happen again.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, with runners, it's one of the things I see them struggle with. Sometimes it's like they so badly want to get back out there and get running again that sometimes they go a little too soon. And
no, I tell them that never happens. I've never seen that.
Sound familiar at all? I know. Oh man. And I tell them, I was like, you know what? One of the things you got to wrap your head around is like, for you, mental toughness isn't pushing through, it's actually holding back. We know you can push through. Mm-hmm. We know that you can tolerate pain. We know that you've got that in you. Your mental toughness is, can I hold myself back when everything in me wants to go?
Yes. I ran with a lady who had injured herself on the trail, had shoulder surgery to correct it. And it was about 2 weeks before she was supposed to run, and she was out there with us. And the problem is the doctor that treats us is a trail runner as well in our group. And so she's like, I can't let this go to Strava because I'll be in trouble.
See me.
but that is an issue. I mean, that's kind of a common joke among runners is like, when can I get it back out and run?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so that is, you know, that holding back is a big issue.
Yeah.
So tell a little bit about, you know, where you are as far with your athletic performance in all of this. I mean, what are you doing? And I mean, you're helping other people, but
I am helping other people.
What are the fun things you're doing? This is,
I know. It's funny. Speaking of injury, I was just getting back into trail running again, and I ended up injuring my left shoulder. So I've been dealing with a right shoulder injury for a few years. It's a long story. Finally got that strong. And a few weeks ago, injured the left shoulder. I was like, the left one was feeling left out because the right one, I've been, you know, coddling it and like giving it all this love and attention. And the left one was like, what about me? So I am coming back from that injury now and just now getting back, like just getting to the point where I think I could probably start getting back out there and running again. So I'm in the process of recovery at the moment. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you're able to do a little bit, but you can't do what you normally do. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep.
So in trail running, do you do events and races? And
I have, yeah. I haven't done any, you know, during COVID, right. Unfortunately.
Everyone's races got canceled.
I know, man. But yeah, I've done some fun, like Ragnar races with teams, and then also done just some trail runs and done a few road. I definitely prefer trail, but I've done some road races as well. Yeah.
So what is your kind of your sweet distance that you like to run?
I really like 10K, like around that distance. Okay. I am intrigued, you know, I have a lot of, you know, because of my clients and my friends and, you know, being a runner, I have a lot of friends that also really dig the ultras, and mm-hmm. I haven't, it's funny. I could see myself doing that before I could see myself doing a marathon. Like, I just want to skip. I don't want to go like really long or just go to do the shorter distances. So I like, I like the shorter, like not sprint, but.
Yeah, 10K for an ultra marathon runner, 10K is a sprint.
Well, I know that's so true, like, right? That is a sprint.
And it's interesting because in my running group, there's a whole range of people, and there are people who really like the marathon and shorter distances because they're fast, you know, and they can be competitive. And then they say, I have no desire to run any farther. And then there's others who, and I like the trail running community because no matter what distance you are, if you're out there doing it, it's like, you're one of us.
Exactly.
And that's the thing that has been, I've enjoyed so much about this community. But so what kind of I was going to ask when you were talking about identity, that, you know, so many people, you know, they look at the injury as like, okay, where is my identity now?
Yeah.
What do you say to the people who have difficulty identifying themselves as a runner? Because I see that as well.
That's
people
true.
Say, and you know, people have a string of medals and say, well, when can I call myself an athlete? And they've got a wall full of races they've run. So
yeah, that's such a great point. And it comes up a lot. Yeah.
It does come up a lot. Yeah.
When am I allowed to call myself a runner? Or, mm-hmm. or I'll hear that. I'm like, oh, well, I'm not like you guys. Or like, mm-hmm. I run, but I'm not like a runner. Or mm-hmm. like, I just dabble over here, but I'm like really an athlete. And so, it's interesting. It's so interesting. This, like how we, you know, part of it's such an individual sort of process that people go through of trying to figure out, well, when do I get to call myself an athlete, or what mm-hmm. qualifies being able to call myself an athlete? And the other thing I've seen runners in particular struggle with is feeling like, well, I can't call myself a runner unless I run the whole thing, right?
Yes.
Like, so if their strategy, even if it's a deliberate strategy of like, mean, I've had some of my athletes that have had a walk run strategy and ended up with their fastest times. Mm-hmm. But then there's other people that are like, well, if I don't run the whole thing, then I can't call myself a runner.
Yeah. Even if you're faster.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's so funny that we just get in these head trips with ourselves of like what allows us to qualify as a runner or an athlete. And really it's, if you're out there and you're moving your body in a forward motion and you enjoy doing that, it's okay to call yourself a runner or to think of yourself as an athlete, because part of it's a mindset. Yes. And so when you do that, it changes how you feel about yourself. It changes the decisions that you make, and nobody gets to decide. Nobody gets to define that but you. You don't nobody else gets to define whether or not you're a runner or you're an athlete.
And the people who struggle with that, I know it's I see it often on the Facebook groups, and everyone, and I know that all the assurances that we tell someone doesn't help them, because it's got to be something that they internalize.
Yes, exactly.
And so I'm kind of like been trying to rack my brain of like, what can I say that will help them make that step? Because it is an identity as a, it's the opposite end of your runners who are injured and go, well, if I can't run, who am I?
Yep.
Or any athlete.
Absolutely.
We get our sense of identity from. And so I haven't come up with anything yet, but
sometimes I'll say it depends on the person. But sometimes, especially if it's like a group that I'm working with and I know that person would think of their friend as an athlete, but they're not qualifying themselves in the same way, then I'll say, well, would you say that same thing to your friend? And they'd be like, oh my gosh, never. Oh, huh. I see what you're getting at, Carrie. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's good. That's good. So when you get to have events come or things open back up, do you have an event that is kind of like on your bucket list you haven't gotten to do yet that it's like, oh yeah, I'd really love to go and run that race?
Good question. I don't actually, and I probably should. That might be something nice to look forward to. So I don't have a bucket list one right now, but I do I do want to get back out there with friends. So if there was anything, it might be one of those. I've done a few just fun, like team obstacle races too, where, running and going through obstacles. And those are really fun to do with friends. So I think that's more on my mind now, probably because of COVID and missing out being with people. It's more like, how can I get back out there with people?
And I know every state is different. Is California very restrictive on groups that we run? Or
yes. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So things are still in flux, and nothing is set in stone yet in terms of what we're going to be able to do. I think they're hoping that we might be able to do some this summer, but I think everyone's just like being very cautious right now with like, I don't want to get too excited because they might just cancel it again.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I'm in Kansas, and so it's not as restrictive, we are in a place that is not very trafficked, and so even when there were restrictions, we kind of went, oh, we're all going to show up at the same spot. It's not really an organized planned event. We just happen to all be here at once.
Yeah, so, exactly.
But yeah, that's been fun. So do you have any more like books that you're looking anything going? What's your next project you're working on to
The next project, I probably have another couple books in me. I don't have anything yet. It's funny when you after writing a book, or at least with the two that I've written, after the first one, it was like a good, like, I need 5 years before I can even think about doing that again. So,
yes, I understand that.
So the next one might be actually, I'm thinking about doing a second edition of On Top of Your Game. Because I wrote that, I think it was 2013. And so there's definitely things I would change and add in there that would be fun to do. Because I still know people that read that book that they'll read it every year as they get into their season, which is like so amazing to me that people are doing that. So I'm like, oh, maybe it would be good to. So I've thought about that, but I haven't. So even though I think there's a couple more books in me, I'm not sure what is next there. But my next big project that I'm working on is I'm starting a membership called the Rebound Lifestyle. So in the book Rebound, the very last chapter is called Rebound Lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of about how do you now use all of these skills in other areas of your life, right?
Okay.
So for the injured athlete, it's how do you use these skills and bring them into competition now that you're recovered? And then how do you bring them into all areas of your life? You know, cause we're kind of performing in different ways, just showing up in your life. And so, so I'm starting a membership where, I'll be doing mental skills training with groups of people.
Okay.
And then also starting group coaching for injured athletes so that they have a place to go to talk to each other. Because we have the Injured Athletes Club Facebook group, which is a support group. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of runners in there, actually. And some of them are wanting more, something a little bit more to dive into the material and kind of do the work that I talk about in the book. So I'll be starting group coaching programs. So those are my big projects coming up that I'm putting some energy into.
Okay. And you have a podcast talking about the injured athletes club. I'm not speaking clearly right now, but so what is the podcast? I mean, are you doing similar work there, similar things there for
advice podcast, for people? Yeah, it's funny. So we're about to enter season 4 of the podcast, and actually I was just writing about this too. It's even though it's for injured athletes, and we get to talk to all of these incredible athletes about their injury story and sort of what they went through and how they recovered and have them share their advice for our audience. But they're, you know, even though they're all talking about injury, the feedback we're getting is that everybody loves listening to these stories because it's all about resilience and triumph and being, you know, facing an obstacle and being able to kind of get through it to the other side. So injured athletes will listen to it because it helps them feel like they're not alone and they're not the only one going through it. And they can get inspiration from people that have gone through it. And then other athletes like listening to it, or people like listening to it just to hear these stories from these incredible people that have gone through these challenges. So yeah, we're about to start up season 4 in March.
Oh, wow. Okay. Okay. Yeah. I ran across a guy who, in fact, he's a podcast episode is upcoming. He was 65 years old and he got hit by a bus. He was running and, that was 10 years ago. And so now he's recovered and he's much slower now, but he's still going. And so I thought, wow, that's, you know, just getting hit by a bus and saying, I'm gonna keep on going.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, that is good. So, anything else you would like to add to this? I have I don't want to drag this out, but if you have any other stories that you would like to comment on, I'd love to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, I think that you know, if there's anyone out there that is injured, definitely, it's so nice to be a part of a community. I mean, just like, you know, you guys are a part of your trail community or your running community. Sometimes, I think sometimes what happens for athletes when they're injured is they might feel a little bit isolated, and it's hard when everybody else can go out there and run and you're not able to run. So to be able to feel like you're part of a community, I think that's why a lot of people end up listening to the podcast or coming to join the support group, the Injured Athletes Club Facebook groups, is so that they can be around people that get it, that get like how hard this is for them, both mentally and emotionally, as well as physically, and how much they want to be out there, but also like celebrate wins with each other and celebrate the milestones. And so, you know, if you're injured, like reaching out for support is so important, and also know that you're still an athlete, but now your recovery is your sport, and everything you were putting into running now goes into your recovery. Mm-hmm. And that that's where what you're doing right now as an athlete. So you're still an athlete, you're still a runner. It just so happens that on your athletic journey, this is what you need to do right now. Mm-hmm. And you're absolutely not alone.
Do you find people who drop out of the community when they get injured?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. in the club, we've had some people ask, like, is it okay if I stay even if I'm recovered now? Like, am I allowed to stay? Am I allowed to stay in the group? Because they get so much out of it. Because you realize, mm-hmm. like, oh gosh, these skills, like, it's nice to be a part of this community, and these skills help in other areas of life, and I can help other people because I've been through it. Mm-hmm. So people, yeah. And then we've had people in the group that, you know, they're there for a long time and sort of being like reading and being a part of it by observing. And then finally there's something where they feel comfortable. Like, I've been a part of the group for a long time. This is the first time I've said anything or reached out for support. So I know people, even if they're not like interacting, they're getting something from just being there with other athletes. Mm-hmm. 'Cause it's one thing for people to, you know, do the mental training and get the skills from me in order to help them with their confidence and their recovery. But it's another thing to be able to be with your tribe and sort of get support from them.
Mm-hmm. That was the reason I asked, is we, there's a lady that came to our, into, was it part of our running community, who injured herself with a, and her recovery was long, and she wore a boot. Okay. And, but she showed up to our weekly group runs.
Oh,
and
that's awesome.
and sat in the shelter house and waited for everybody. And it was like,
oh,
it was this time of year. It was February, and it would like 15 degrees out. And she would wrap up and sit
and
there.
She'd still
bring like fast food. And she ended up recovering enough to walk, but she never really was able to run with us ever again, and ended up having to move. Mm. And I helped her move, and I asked her, I said, what was it? She said that she'd have friends invite her for coffee, but the coffee shop was always across the parking lot or whatever. And this was one place she could come and just walk a few steps and be with people.
Yep.
And her comment was, I needed to be with people.
Yeah.
And so it's
just so interesting how some people will want that. They'll like come and they'll connect, and then other people, the hurt is so big that they feel like they can't do it. But what we find is that if you can get through that, people are usually glad that they went. Like, so if some people do end up dropping out, they'll sort of, it's too painful for them. There's a couple things that happen. It feels like it hurts to be out there and not be able to do the thing, whatever the support is. But the other thing people struggle with sometimes is they'll go out there and they'll find themselves feeling guilty because they're having a hard time being excited for their teammates or their friends, because they're so wrapped up in like seeing what they are not able to do. Mm-hmm. But then if you can manage the emotional piece, and so that's sometimes what I'm helping athletes do, is like, how do I manage the emotional piece so I can go out there and connect? And sometimes they'll go and just honor that, like, I am bummed and I do wish I could be out there, but it's also great to be out here and support the people that I care about. So that's pretty cool that she was able to do that for herself and get out there.
And the thing that kind of surprised me is there would be times when, I mean, every club has kind of their cliques, their in-group. And so there would be times very few people would talk to her. And I always try to made it a point to at least go over and say a few words just so that she didn't feel left out. But it's just like, she kept coming back, even though she wasn't like in the center of everything. She was kind of off on the edge. But she realized, I think, that was important, and she just needed to be physically around other people. And that she showed up. And you know, that's one of the things that you said that I have discovered, is that if I can learn how to celebrate other people's success, it actually benefits me. Mm-hmm. That it doesn't diminish from what I have. And I've found sometimes even celebrating other people's success allows me to experience my own success because of that. There's just something inside of us, I think, that enables that. And then the other thing is that being part of a group, of just showing up is a big deal. Even if there is an in-group, or you know, a click or whatever, just showing up on a regular basis, you eventually get to be like, oh yeah, you get familiar if you show up. And I know it's hard sometimes, but to keep going back, but it takes kind of that persistence to break into groups sometimes.
Yeah, Yeah, I think it's hard. I think people start, end up doing comparisons. And so to know, like, even if you go out there and you're doing your own rehabilitation exercises, like, that's okay. I think it's sometimes sort of feeling like, instead of looking at it like, I'm out here and I'm going to do what I can, and that's what I'm going to gauge my feelings of success on, you sort of compare yourself to what other people are able to do and wish you could do that, and then end up internalizing it in a negative way. So when you go out with a clear intention of why you want to be out there and how you're going to gauge your own feelings of success and who you want to connect with, then it can be a really positive thing during your recovery.
Well, and that kind of goes back to where you started out talking about performance anxiety, because I would imagine that, you know, people get performance anxiety from comparing themselves to other people.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah.
So what is kind of the way that you can get that focus off of other people, and you know, what kind of stories do you tell yourself to be able to make that switch in your mind?
Yeah, one of the things I'll work on with athletes, there's two things in particular. One is making sure that they're setting goals that are setting themselves up for success going into the event. So looking at not just the outcome goal of like, well, what do you want the outcome of this event to be, but what do you need to be focusing on in order to make that happen? So getting really clear on where their focus needs to be. And very rarely is it, I need to focus on what this other person's doing, right? Because really what that other person is doing has nothing to do with what I need to do in order to race my best race. So that's one of the things that we're doing on, is like being very clear about the goals that we have and assessing whether or not they have a secret goal. So the secret goal is, you know, there's a stated goal, which is like, this is the goal that I tell Carrie, or this is the goal I tell my coach. But really in the back of my mind, my secret goal is I want to do this, right? I want to be top 10. I want to be whatever it is. And the reason that's important is that's the goal you gauge your feelings of success on. So we want to know. So now my athletes, when I'm working with someone, they'll be like, okay, so my secret goal is this. Like, they'll just tell me what their secret goal is, because we know, like, we need to bring that out so we can look at it and go, okay, is that the real goal? And do we need to commit to doing what it takes to get to that goal? Or do we need to change the goal and know that the goal that you did choose is a worthy goal? And that's what we're gauging our feelings of success on. Because if you don't do that process, you're always going to gauge your feelings of success based on the secret goal, even if you didn't prepare yourself to be able to actually accomplish that.
Okay.
And it's not a bad thing to have. We all have them. It's natural. So it's just like knowing that we have it and what it is, and getting clear on, well, what do I actually need to focus on? And then the other thing I'll do is a pre-performance plan. So a lot of times people might have like a focus plan, or they might have their, go-to things to get through the race and feel confident, or get through a moment where it's going to be tough and they have to push through. But a lot of times we don't prepare for the time leading up, which is when we might do some of the comparison as well. So making sure that there's a plan for how you talk to yourself and how you spend your time and how you want to feel like in the hours leading up to the event, as well as throughout the event.
That, and I think a lot of us don't, we're rather cavalier about the
totally
the beginning part. I think that preparation, the training for that preparation, can start even before the race.
The mental,
you know, putting yourself in that and seeing, you know, there's a lot of things that go into that, I think. So
yeah, absolutely.
That's important. Well, I know you've got a hard break coming up, and I don't want to rush you into your take up all your time from your next appointment. So how can people connect with you? What's the best way, if someone's listening to this podcast or seeing us on Facebook, want to connect to you, reach out, how's the best way to do that?
Yeah. So you could check out the injuredathletesclub.com. There's a website there with all kinds of resources for people, or you can head over to my website, which is carriecheadle.com, soon to change to carriejackson.com. But right now you can head to carriecheadle.com and get all kinds of resources there. You can get connected with me on social media, on Instagram and Twitter. I'm at Feed the Athlete, and on Facebook, it's Mental Skills Training for Athletes.
Facebook is Mental Skills Training for Athletes.
Yes.
And that's a page. And then it's Feed the Athlete.
Yes.
Okay. So yeah. I would think that is a nutrition.
Right. And actually it's, so I talk about that in the first book that, we all have a little monster on one shoulder and a little athlete on the other. And whichever one you feed is the one that gets stronger.
Yes. Yes.
So you want to feed the athlete.
Yeah. I've heard several different variations of that, yes. Of that image. So, yes, that is so true for ourselves. So thank you a lot, Carrie. I appreciate you making time to be here. And I'm going to say goodbye. If you, in the podcast here, and we can talk a little bit for just a second. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. So, okay, wait a minute. No, I don't want to end the, okay. That's the end of the recording. So I clicked the wrong button. I was like, almost cut you off.
That's fun.
Hey, thank you so much for being a part of this. And now I don't have the psychology background, but I started out training as a life coach.
Oh,
and,
cool.
And so I've got certified as in life coach training. Of course, you know, there's a lot of people out there doing that. And my friend was running with me on he was pacing me for my first attempt at 100 miles. And his comment was, he says, you've got the mental skills of this down. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of took the life coaching and thought, this is kind of my niche to the mindset training of life coaching, but using the ultramarathon mindset kind of as a way to say, here are tools to help you with all of life.
And yes.
But I love the things that you were saying as well. And I know each of us has kind of our own spin on that. I am in the process of being certified as a Qi running instructor. So.
Oh, very cool. I did a Qi running course one time. That's awesome. Yeah.
Well, we got 3 minutes, so let you have a chance to take a break if you need to.
Oh, so, thank you so much. Yeah, thanks for having me on the show. It.
Thanks a lot, Carrie.
Yeah, all right, take care. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Trail Talk. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider giving us a 5-star rating and review, and don't forget to subscribe. That way you won't miss out on any new episodes. If you'd like to contact me, you can find me on Facebook as @UltramarathonMindset, or you can find me on the web at theultramarathonmindset.com. Remember, your mindset is the key to success in running and in life, and developing a strong mindset is a skill you can improve. Hey, thanks again for listening. I'll see you next time.